So I just wanted to share some reflections about being a counselor. I'd encourage you to actually do the same and maybe do a little audio recording of your thoughts as you reflect back in the time you've worked in the mental health field and what that's like for you, your expectations going into it versus what's happened. Part of the reason I wanted to do this is just to let you know that some of the things I share, while the scenarios might be a little different in my life than yours, that a lot of times we share some similarities in terms of why we're drawn to the field, what our expectations are, and things. So it's not, again, abnormal to have stresses and even question sometimes, why am I doing what I'm doing, or is it effective? So as I think about how I got interested in the mental health field, I remember back in high school, they had an intro to psych class, and I just thought learning about people was the coolest thing. Understanding, why do people think the way they do? Why do they do what they do? Why do some people in the same situation act one way, and then other people in that situation act differently? It just was fascinating to me. Just the diversity in people's emotions and behaviors and how two people can process the same experience differently. I was really fascinated also by the whole social psychology piece of, you know, things like two people can look at a situation and just have a totally different account of the same thing, but be equally convinced about the account that they're giving. Well, when I was in high school and even in college, I thought I might want to work with children and families. And I thought, you know, there's so many needs there. All throughout my high school years, I had done some service projects and things where I did some religious education and got a certification in that. So pretty early on in my undergrad at Xavier University, where I was double majoring in elementary ed and psych, they put me in a internship situation, actually two different internships, in the inner city Cincinnati school system. And what was interesting to me is at that time, I started feeling a change within me in terms of what I wanted to do to help families and kids. Initially, when I started my undergrad, I kept thinking, oh, I'll be able to teach them, provide education, be like a big sister role model type of thing, you know, the classroom, these activities, the creativity. And while I still had the drive for those, there were specific situations that I saw with kids and families in the inner cities in Cincinnati that really touched my heart. I remember at the one school, I would just see that the one teacher had in her desk granola bars, apples, little things to get them through the day, that many of the kids did not have food or snacks besides the free lunch that was provided at school. Many of them didn't have pencils at home to be able to do anything like homework. There weren't always adults around that placed emphasis on education. Some of them went to bed hungry, came to school hungry. Many of the kids reported changes in the parents, significant others, or who was in and out of the house. At that point, I felt like I just wanted to, quote, make more of an impact. And again, I have utmost admiration for teachers, all the different roles that they play. I mean, especially nowadays, my gosh, there's so much that teachers do that I think is greatly undervalued. But I found that my heart was breaking. I felt like there were times I wanted to have tears in my eyes. I felt like I wanted to almost like befriend the kids to a degree. I wanted to give them skills. I wanted to help instill hope where they felt they had no control over some of their living situations. And there were some kids where I saw, even in the midst of some of the roughest living situations and some pretty traumatic things, I saw some kids that were surprisingly resilient or had some strengths. I remember one boy in particular, Isaiah, that really warmed my heart. And a lot of the teachers actually didn't like the kid. They had branded him a troublemaker. But I remember in the teacher's lounge when they're like, oh boy, who's going to have him next year? I remember speaking up and saying, you know what? That kid's cool. They were like, what? And I'm thinking, oh boy, I guess I'm the, you know, little intern girl who's having a difference of opinion. But that boy, I found out that he was actually way more intelligent and possibly even gifted compared to his classmates. But unfortunately, the teachers had branded him a troublemaker because he was acting distracted. He'd twirl his pencil around, he'd tap on his desk or, you know, make a joke to one of the other kids he was sitting near. And I remember one of the teachers saying, gosh, if I allow him to sit on the carpet and read a book, you know, I can't just let him do that. And I remember saying, well, why not? If he's doing the work that's expected of him, why not? And I remember being fascinated by the idea of adapting learning styles to different kids' personalities. I remember thinking, how do we really be creative in a way that draws in the different narratives and backgrounds of each of these kids and families? And so then I thought, you know what? I don't just want to teach educational material. I really think I want to continue on with a psych degree. I don't just want to get my bachelor's. I really want to go on and do more than just teaching the educational material. I want to really get one-on-one or involved in a more detailed way in these systems and see what we can do to instill hope and teach them skills. So at that point, I decided to really focus on the psych piece. I went for my master's in counseling psych at Loyola of Maryland, which was fascinating. It was fascinating getting to deal with professors who mostly all had their own private practices, who were doing great things in terms of, you know, working with governmental agencies, working at local psych hospitals, juggling, raising families, being a professor, doing all these things. And so I remember one of my expectations was, and I remember my first professor in grad school, this young, attractive lady, 29 years old, and she's a mom, has two little kids, has her PhD, is teaching, does private practice, and I thought, just like some of my other friends in grad school, wow, that's who we want to model this after. Look at her. She's kind of got it all. And we thought, you know, of course we don't know what's happening in her personal life or all the factors, but we're like, she has it all. The girl had memorized the DSM, could tell you the code numbers, the criteria, the everything, just seemed to be successful at every turn. Then after grad school, I ended up moving back to Cincinnati, and found an agency where they highlighted both the clinical counseling and psych piece. The owner of the agency, Growthways in Cincinnati, was a licensed psychologist, and so I had the best of that world, but they also had an educational division, where they did publications and writings, where they were involved with the schools and communities. And so for me, that felt like just a good fit with everything that I was fascinated with. But over time, I realized that my heart really wasn't just for the kids, that I felt like there, you know, were so many different factors. There were, you know, the parents, the non-traditional families, the individual adults. There were just so many different people that I felt like I could reach out to and make a difference. Over time, I was thrilled at the first practice I worked at. I loved it. I felt so much support, empathy. One of the things, though, in terms of my initial internship that was of concern was that while there was a lot of support and empathy, I don't know that there was as much direction as maybe I would have liked to have in terms of specifics when there's some problem solving or challenging that may need to happen. But at the time, there was a lot of open-endedness about what would happen with that particular company, since the owner of the company was older in years, and there wasn't as specific of a plan as I felt comfortable with in terms of what would happen next. And so then I ended up relocating with my then husband to a rural Appalachian community mental health setting. And that, honestly, was probably one of my least favorite settings, in that while I feel like my skills were good, I don't feel like culturally I was well prepared for the difference and the culture shock in terms of working in that setting, or not just even that county, but also in terms of a community mental health setting. My degree was in counseling psych. All the professors in my grad school and even the professors in Cincinnati, at University of Cincinnati, at my advanced graduate studies, were all people who had private practices. So that's what I knew, was how to give people techniques, how to role model things. Not really, I was not interested in community support, case management, and social work types of stuff. And actually, it kind of turned me off. And we were very much advised by professors and in our ethics trainings that those were things that needed to be delegated out to case managers and community support people that had a social work background or a different licensure than an LPC or LPCC, who were supposed to be limited to more office-based types of clinical stuff. So for the few years that I worked in community mental health, there was a discrepancy between what my hopes and my expectations in terms of my life goals, my career goals, were versus what happened. The reimbursement and the salary was awful. Cost of living was a lot lower, but I didn't feel affirmed and respected for the level of licensure I had. Most people who worked in that setting, I mean, I think there was only one other person there besides myself who was an older gentleman who had independent licensure. The director herself was hired because she was someone that lived in the community and understood the needs of the community, but was not independently licensed. Other people who worked with me, which were at least 20 to 30 other professionals, none of them, except for the one older gentleman, had independent licenses. So I felt somewhat out of place there, both in a cultural setting, because it was very different for me, as well as the community support and social work aspect of things. Over time, I knew I wanted to get back to something more like a private practice. But since I didn't have any experience with insurance panels, with marketing, with advertising, or with really running a business, especially a mental health business on my own, I realistically knew that that may or may not happen. So I responded to a few ads, ended up working for a friend's practice in Grove City, and then later worked for another person's practice in Upper Arlington, part of Columbus here. And over time, when I worked for the second practice, basically by then, over time, I had learned how to get on insurance panels, what to do, how to market and advertise. I had become more solid and more competent, more reassured within myself of the therapeutic skills that I had learned with different populations. Then I was forced to make my dream come true. In 2003, we were told by the owner of that practice that we would no longer be employees for his practice, but we would have to start our own private practices. And so from 2004 to present, I have been doing private practice at various locations through my own practice, River of Life Professional Counseling, around Columbus. And so I've continued to increase my competencies and things. For me, with my personality, I love private practice in the sense that there's the freedom in terms of how you schedule clients, but it basically is what you put into it. I mean, people will not just come to you just because you have a kind heart or because you know some skills. There's no way that people out there are going to know at first glance that Michelle Sparks is available versus so-and-so out there. So there's a lot of work and time that needs to be put into that to develop that. That's not everybody's cup of tea. One of the things I realized over time is that I felt that mental health professionals were really shortchanged in terms of us not getting, in most of our graduate education, an adequate training about the different types of mental health settings. Say a community mental health versus a private practice versus an agency, a 501(c) nonprofit, a for-profit, a hospital setting, you know, that there's differences to each of those. There's requirements and pros and cons to each of those, and the business model is just different. For example, when I've had interns that worked at River of Life Professional Counseling in the past, I had to be sure that they understood that it's not like I'm just going to hand them 30 ready-made clients, that there is an aspect in a private practice of marketing, building, and that's part of the experience. So it's rather interesting. I've worked in hospital settings as well, and like I said, for other people's practices. But I think a lot of it, as we'll see in the various parts of today's seminar, is going to be finding the fit that's good for you, the types of clientele, the setting. Is productivity and a ready-made caseload and going through the motions, getting your paycheck in a sort of like a guaranteed setting, like a community mental health, something you want that, you know, you can have a lot of stability in that, in the sense of not having to do the marketing, not having to put that extra in because you have the ready-made caseload. But it can be more crisis-oriented. Or the private practice. Is that the route you want to go and put in for the marketing, the advertising, the business aspect of it? I know most people, when we think of mental health, we don't think of having to be a business person as well. And in fact, I know that many of us think that, oh boy, like I've heard from so many of our colleagues, that the money aspect of having to make ends meet for a hospital or a practice or an agency that's private in particular is a frustration for some of them. So to me, I look at, as you'll hear in the second part of today's seminar, the discrepancies between what I went in wanting or thinking the mental health field was, and then over time what I learned. And I realized that having colleagues to check in with, having verbal affirmation or just a sense of correction or perspective was really, really important to me. That I didn't necessarily want a ready-made caseload. It actually burdened me and deeply saddened me the 2 years I worked in community mental health. One, because I wasn't prepared for it. There was not one person in my grad school for my master's or in my post-grad program that did anything in community mental health. They all were private practitioners and much along the lines of what I wanted to do in the long run. So I just wasn't prepared for it. I wasn't prepared for the constant crisis and what to me was very sad of feeling like clients who had real needs about real life issues and adjustments and traumas, who weren't ready to kill themselves, had to be put in a crisis in order to even get an appointment. And it really, really was sad to me and frustrating about the fact that when I was starting to meet the people on my caseload, a number of them were rescheduled because we had walk-in crises, so they had to be pushed back sometimes for 3 and 4 months before they could come in and see me, according to basically being told that those who were in crisis in the lobby had to be seen and they had to be rescheduled for another month out. And some of them that had happened 3, 4, 5 times to where they would see the doctor but not be able to get but a couple therapy sessions in a whole year. To me, I felt like basically what I would be doing with them wouldn't be effective. There's no way a few sessions a year. And that's another reason why I found that private practice is a good fit for me, is because within reason, most of the people that are calling to practice are largely motivated to get help, want skills, are willing to learn things, as well as able to come in weekly or every other week. You know, it's very rare that I would have someone who would be seen once a month unless they were towards almost termination. So I don't have that feeling of concern with private practice that I did with community mental health, where I felt like it was just a band-aid, that people were really not getting adequate care. So the key, I guess, as you'll find out in the second session of today's seminar, is going to be really finding what's a good match for you. Really being honest with yourself about what it is when you hope and dream about what you want to be in the long run in the field, where is that compared to where you're at now? Even if it is similar to the setting you're in, think about things like, are the goals clear? Are the goals of the agency you're working for similar to your personal goals? Do you feel like the supervising staff or the administrative staff really actually do support you? Do you get the affirmation you need? Or are you on your own? Is there room for creativity? Is there room for your personal and professional goals to be met and affirmed? Those are really, really important considerations. And I think one of the other thoughts I know that was important for me was being willing to give myself permission to change. To change settings, to change schedules, to change what shift you work on, to talk with someone about what clients are in your caseload or which ones seem to be more within your scope of practice, so that you feel like you're genuinely effective and at the setting and working with the clients that are best for you to manage your level of stress. Thank you, and I wish you well in developing your goals, finding the setting that is affirming for you and that helps you meet what you want in the long run as a mental health professional.